You open it up and it's like, have some engine with your turbo. It's not quite that, yeah. but it's close. For a stock standard turbo, it is rather large. It's larger than what you're going to get on A45. Yes, it is the same sort of engine you're going to get in an A45, but alone it pushes out 350 kilowatts.
Okay.
From a 2-liter four-cylinder with a warranty.
Yeah.
That is phenomenal. Welcome to Auto Traders Podcast. My name is Chad Lukoff and I'll be your host for the week. And I am joined on the couches by Reino Furi. Welcome.
Thank you, motoring content producer.
Yes, and I'm still trying to figure out what the difference is between content producer and content creator, because the SMSs at the end of the month are pretty much the same.
Well, I call the shots and you just have to do it.
Okay, so I'm jumping through hoops. Probably why I'm in the left-hand seat this week. All right, well, welcome to the show. We have a little bit of a themed show where it is four-pot performers, because all of the vehicles that we're going to be discussing here have one thing in common, four-cylinder engines.
Yeah.
We're going to start things off with Hot or Not, where we're going to be discussing the new Toyota Hilux GRS, the third iteration of that. And then we move into Yes But No, where we will be discussing a vehicle that both of us have driven, the all-new Mercedes AMG C63 SE Performance. Very controversial.
Very.
Yeah, because they have done away with the V8 and they've moved over to a four-cylinder. But we'll dive into that. And we're going to go on to Heat Seekers, where we're going to take a look at some of the vehicles that were revealed, not necessarily launched, at the Nampu Harvest Festival, the Nampu Usfias, an annual show that is absolutely massive. You were there, you got to see, and there's a lot to talk about there.
A lot, yeah.
All right. Then we're going to wrap things up with Ask Auto Trader, where we've got a question from a reader, viewer, customer, and he's looking for our advice. He's looking for a sensible option with a sensible budget, looking for a sensible car.
And we think we found some.
I think we found something sensible.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, both of us have. But we're going to kick things off with the Toyota Hilux GRS. So that launched last week. It is under embargo, so we can't discuss opinions, but we can give you the facts and figures because the vehicle is on sale right now. We're not going to talk about the price just yet. We're going to talk about some of the specs. We can give you the specs because it's available on the Toyota website. It's available on showroom floors. You know, you could climb into it and develop your own opinion. I'm just not allowed to give you an opinion on it.
Just yet.
Just yet. Just yet. It will come.
Just from the face of it, it looks incredibly aggressive.
They definitely have beefed up the appearances of it. So the way that the GR hierarchy works is right at the top of the pyramid, you have GRMN. Then below that, you have GR products. So GR Corolla, GR Yaris, GR Supra, and GR 86. They're performance orientated. There's engine work, suspension work, body work, all that type of thing. Below that comes this, okay. GRS. So you can get it in, you can get a GRS Fortuna, you get the GRS Land Cruiser, you get GRS
Corolla Cross.
Corolla Cross even. That is the most affordable Toyota product that you can climb into that carries a GR badge. Mm. So this, you must think of it along the lines of Renault's GT line, Mercedes-Benz's
AMG
line, and BMW's M Sport. It's not a bespoke M vehicle, it's just an M Sport. It looks sporty. But the engine is largely still stock standard. So it still runs the 2.8 litre GD6, 165 kilowatts, 550 newton meters.
Okay. But now I can see from here, like you've got like these big wheel arches.
Yeah.
You've got like a new front grille, some bumpers, skid plate, etc. that's happening there. But underneath all of this like strong appearance, did they actually change anything mechanically from a standard RS? For instance?
So that's probably the nearest correlation that you're going to pull is with like Legend RS, and they have. So this one has a reworked suspension, and this is now the first time that they've sort of genuinely tackled the suspension. And in the corners, you're going to find a set of dedicated KYB monotube shocks that have been designed and tuned specifically for the Hilux. It increases the ride height by 20 millimeters. So it rides a little taller. It's also got a wider front track and a wider rear track. And that is complemented by disc brakes on all four wheels.
Okay.
You get red calipers. And then, of course, all-terrain tires. So it comes out with these all-terrain BF Goodriches. Toyota apparently had to jump through hoops to get these homologated so that they could still give the warranty. Uh-huh. And that's what a lot of people don't think of. They're like, oh, you can just slap a set of wheels and tires on a vehicle. No, actually, believe it or not, the wheels and tires that it comes out with is what it's been homologated with, and it's what it's been tested with. Mm. And yeah, they could actually void your warranty if they don't like the wheels and tires that have been fitted to your Hilux. So this is factory fit, and you don't need to worry about it.
But I mean, those wheels are sexy, actually.
They are. They're also bespoke to the GRS. GRS3 is what they're calling it. And it gets a couple of other little niceties. You know, you've got these little stripes. We're taking a look at a picture of the black one here. There's now four colors available.
Okay.
There were three colors. It was a white, a red, and a black. And now you can get it in chromium silver as well.
Okay.
And it's got these little flashes of red and white or black and red, depending on which color you go with. It's got the tonneau cover at the rear. It's got an easy lift tailgate. It has a sports bar on it. And then inside it, you get a GR steering wheel. The stitching is red instead of silver.
Okay.
And you get some GR embroidery and a JBL sound system, which was actually one of those things that was missing from the GRS2,
the previous version.
But we need to remember that Hilux is due for an update.
Yes, fairly soon, actually.
When you talk in car terms, fairly soon is also like 24 months.
Yeah.
So we could be waiting 2 years for the next Hilux.
100%.
I can ask you your take on that.
So for me, like, at least it's not just a sticker pack.
No.
Because there's a lot of the vehicle manufacturers that will actually just do a sticker pack. It looks all that, mm-hmm. but then there's not enough changes. Now you mentioned that it's disc brakes all round. So instead of a drum brake at the rear, disc brakes back there, all of that, larger disc brakes up front for better braking performance. And then obviously you've got like the suspension system that they've upgraded there. So obviously those enthusiasts that do like a little bit of sporty off-road driving, they're going to enjoy that. But I think also there's a misconception in the sort of general public that this is supposed to be competing with the likes of a Ford Ranger Raptor.
Yeah.
And that's not the case here.
No, not quite. The sticker on this one, so the price is 999,000 Rand.
Okay.
It's 1K shy of R1 million. You're going to take maybe a smash and grab or something of the sort, and you're going to bump it over that. Any case. It doesn't quite compete with that. It's more along the lines of like a Tremor, which is like an XLTX,
okay,
or a Wildtrak X.
Yes.
But I can't say too much about how I feel it stacks up against that.
Yes.
Just yet.
But I mean in terms of performance and so on.
Yes.
But then going like the Ford products, which we have had opportunity to drive recently, they are very tech orientated inside.
They are.
And do you feel, not feel, but is there, if you have to put tech for tech next to one another, do you feel like the...
I don't believe it's comparable.
Isn't.
And I think that's possibly where Ford has the upper hand here.
Okay.
In this. It's a bit of a fans-only product. But I do recall when the very first GRS came out, and that was largely just sort of sticker pack, dress-up yes. kits, aesthetics. We went and we shot something up in Uppington.
Okay.
And it was before the V6 Raptor launch, so it was still the previous Ranger Raptor. And never before had we seen more GRSs or Raptors in one place than we saw in Uppington.
Okay.
It was, it resonated with the communities out in the slightly more rural farmlands, that are doing the distances, maybe traveling more gravel roads.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this one is going to stand sort of head and shoulders above a regular Legend.
Yeah. Okay. So, like you said, it's got a 2.8 GD6 motor, mm-hmm. so pretty much 6-speed automatic, the whole thing. But now on that, like, there's a four-cylinder in a performance Bucky, but now there's another four-cylinder vehicle that has sort of stolen a lot of the headlines recently.
Yes,
And it's one that both of us had the opportunity to drive, you a little bit more at pace, and that is obviously the Mercedes-AMG C63 SE Performance, as you can see there. It is a glorious looking thing.
It is beautiful. It really is.
But very controversial what happens under that sleek bonnet.
It is. Okay, so now, embargo, there is no embargo on this. Yeah. So now I can give opinion. All right, here we go. Strap in, folks. This one's going to get entertaining. Yeah, C63S. I had the esteemed honor of revealing it to the South African public for the first time to get them to see it in action. And that was at the Somoli Hill Climb. I managed to finish second in class and fifth overall in the streetcar category, which is pretty high accolades for somebody who's never been up the hill.
To just put that in perspective, because fifth place overall is that's great. Mm. To put that in perspective, in sixth place, I believe there was a McLaren 720S.
Correct.
And this is a four-cylinder sedan.
Well above the 458.
Oh, 458 Ferrari as well.
You know, that was the sort of company that was being kept with this vehicle. And it is a phenomenal vehicle. But at the same time, I hear what the public is saying. So the 4-liter twin turbo V8 is gone.
Yes.
The 6.2-liter naturally aspirated V8 from the W203 is
gone.
203, 204. 204.
Four, yeah.
204, apologies. From the 204 is gone. In its place is a 2-liter four-cylinder with plug-in hybrid assistance.
Yeah.
Okay, but there is a list. This car is an absolute tech fest because it's got an electrically excited turbocharger. I mean, an electric motor that runs off the 400-volt electric system spins this turbo at 154,000 RPM. Okay.
And it's not
That's before a exhaust
turbo.
Gases.
It's not like a tiny little turbo. It's a turbo.
It's a turbo. This looks like it is an aftermarket, you know, Toyota Supra, and you open it up and it's like, have some engine with your turbo. It's not quite that, yeah. but it's close. For a stock standard turbo, it is rather large. It's larger than what you're going to get on A45. Yes, it is the same sort of engine you're going to get in an A45, but alone it pushes out 350 kilowatts.
Okay.
From a 2-liter four-cylinder with a warranty.
Yeah.
That is phenomenal. So then you're going to get an additional 150 kilowatts from the electric motor, which sits on the rear axle. There's a battery above it. And they've put it like that so that it's got a 51-49 weight distribution. So it's near 50-50,
okay.
Which means that it's wonderfully balanced. It really is. Taking it up the hill, it was very predictable and relatively easy to drive. It's also got the 4MATIC Plus all-wheel drive system. It has 1,020 Newton meters of torque. This is the most powerful C63 we have ever seen.
Yeah.
But it does lack. And I hear what you guys are saying out there on the internet about how can you make it a C63 and it doesn't have the V8. Yeah. I mean, it never had a 6.3. It was never a 6.3. It was a 6.2.
Yeah.
And we forget that the C63 is only three generations old now. Before that, it was C55 anyway. So there's a little bit of lineage. But the cult-like following that it has gained in that short span of time, those two generations, wow, they seem really bitter about it.
It led me... So obviously, I've driven it also a little bit. And... To put it into perspective, if from a technical point of view, as a technical exercise from Mercedes and for Mercedes building a performance car, it is amazing what this car can
do. Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
The fact that they managed to get so much power onto the wheels as well as have you feel confident behind the wheel to handle that power is amazing. But then there is that whole... Okay, if I'm going to be spending the money for this particular type of car, especially these sort of brutes in these German car manufacturers, mm-hmm. I want to have the drama to go with it.
Yeah.
And that's
you
where
need
that
theater.
That, yeah, exactly. And that's where the sort of the V8s come in. Mm. Not too long ago, I drove the RS6 Performance mm-hmm. Quattro. Mm-hmm. V8, 4-liter twin turbo V8. And just the sound of starting that up in the morning when it's nice and cold, you know, that type of thing, already you get excited, if you know what I mean.
There's a sense of occasion attached to that. And I think that's largely what Mercedes-Benz has missed the plot with here is, exactly. is that sense of occasion. When you the certain vehicles you climb into and you're like, this is transportation. But in this area of motoring, where it is pinnacle peak of D-segment sedans and the likes, you need theater. You need something that just stirs the soul because you... Yes, there are a lot of people that drive it for the sake of it is what it is. You know, so just for the wow factor and for, almost for the bragging rights. Let's put it what it is for the status.
Yeah.
But there's a very, very healthy contingent that drive it because of what it represents in terms of the pinnacle of engineering, the largest, the realization of motorsport technology, and traditionally that has been loud and shouty. And I understand, this isn't loud and shouty in the same way. While this is packed with Formula One technology, like that rapid discharge and regenerating battery, it's, you know, which is lifted straight out of Formula One, the electrically excited turbocharger, all of that, the KERS system, that's all Formula One technology. It's just muted.
Yeah.
And you want that sense of occasion.
100%.
There's a handful of cars that give you that. And if that's what you're after... unfortunately, you are going to be disappointed with the C63, this W206 C63 SE performance.
But just like the C63, we're going to accelerate in 3.2 seconds or 3.4 seconds
3.4, yeah,
to the next segment.
Yeah.
Because there's another four-potter that's been driven. I drove a territory that Ford sent us to Boerterville.
Yeah, to Boerterville, to Nampo, yes. And I love Nampo, I really do. It's such a traditional, wholesome. It's a really wholesome event that really showcases and gives us city slickers a taste of what is happening in the agricultural industry in the country, which is still thriving. And it is a massive, massive industry.
100%.
It's a lengthy drive from Joburg out to Boerterville. It's three and a half hours. How was that new territory? I'm actually rather curious because a lot has been written about this car.
Yeah. No, I think the territory, the drive down there was actually quite interesting because you get to spend some extended time with a quite a nice product. For me personally, I feel like on the highways, everything is so smooth. It's very compliant. The transmission is nice and smooth. I do feel it's maybe for what it is a little bit heavy on the fuel side. Not terrible.
What sort of figures were you getting?
Well, realistic highway back and forth was 8.1 liters per 100 kilometers, which I feel it could dip under eight, and then it would be like, okay, great. This is...
You'd love to see sort of eights, mid to high eights, anything sort of in the eights in the urban commute. And then you'd like to know that if I sort of drive this nicely, especially for the size of the vehicle, it's not a small vehicle, but it's also not overly large.
No, it's not massive. SUV. It's not Everest or anything. It's,
yeah.
It fits in between a Puma and Everest. So, you know, think... Jerry Tiggo, Tiggo 7. You know, those stuff.
We're going to get to that in a bit.
But yeah.
And then you'd like to see sort of like sixes, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
But otherwise, very well spec'd, even in the train that I drove, which is pretty much a mid-tier spec. Mm-hmm. Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, all of that, nice creature comforts. But it's not that drive. We'll talk about territory when we get even...
when we dive into it a little more.
A little more.
All right, but we'll do that.
Ford invited us to Nampo, and we arrived, and two cars that quickly stood out on the stand was the new Ford Trineo and Transit. So obviously the Trineo is the bus, so people carrier, like that. It is got eight seats, which even at the back you can change the seats around, have it like nice and conference style going. And then there was the Transit, which is obviously the van, the panel van, which you can load a bunch of stuff in the back. It's a lot more utilitarian. And this is more of a base spec model. Both of them also...
A bit of a workhorse, really.
Workhorse, really.
You're going to see this one with company branding on the side and the likes.
100%. Yeah. But don't mistake the fact that it's a base model that it's like not at all well specified. Like inside this base model, the center screen is a 13-inch touchscreen infotainment system with Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, all the likes. So your company driver is going to have all the comfort.
All the distractions he needs.
All the distraction he needs. But he's going to have a nice and clear big map on the center.
And no excuse, yeah, to get lost again. Yeah.
Exactly. And then in front of the driver is an 8-inch digital instruments cluster and all of that. And they all, even that base model came with cruise control, all of that's for the highways and et cetera. So incredibly well specified for what it is.
Definitely, yes.
That, I think it was 692,000 for the Transit, which is the panel van, and in base spec. And then the Tourneo was a trend model, so it's sort of mid-tier again, yeah. And that was 999,000 rand. Both of them also 2-liter diesel motors, 100 kilowatts, 360 newton meters of torque. The Tourneos come with an 8-speed automatic transmission, whereas the Transit has a 6-speed manual coupled to it. So yeah, but it was actually very impressive. And obviously, if you think agricultural, like that Transit was just drawing all the attention because absolutely, everybody yeah. was like, okay, how much loading space?
Well, it's largely a very commercial show as well. So you're going to see a lot of truck trailers. It's not just agriculture, you know. And when you say agriculture, you think, oh, it's a, you know, just combine tractors, harvesters. And
trust me, there was plenty.
No, there were. but like trucking and transportation and that. So it's but on the commercial side as well. And this really, for those, especially those that are running businesses from their farms and the likes, that Transit makes perfect sense.
100%.
It does.
But then I took a stroll.
Mm-hmm. Where did you end up?
I walked around and I got to Mitsubishi's sort of nice display. And I found the new Triton there, which was quite interesting.
Pre-launch,
yeah. Because we were like, what is this? We haven't seen this either.
When are we expecting to see that?
They didn't have official like dates or any figures or anything for us. Like, we were like trying to get them. That's a little bit later. Anyway.
We'll get to that, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that one. Sorry. But yeah, no, so we they didn't give any official dates or anything like that just yet. We do expect it a little bit, maybe fourth quarter of this year.
Yeah.
But there was also a nice little compact crossover, which Mitsubishi has the ASX, but it's not anymore going to be an ASX.
Is it a replacement for it?
Complete new replacement for it. It doesn't have even that shape, that sort of sporty back shape.
Yeah, sport back, yeah.
It's actually just, it almost looks venue, Hyundai venue. Like,
okay.
I believe it was called the Outlander Sport.
Okay, so they're taking Pajero and they've got Pajero Sport as sort of like the softened up version of it.
Yeah,
and if they're taking Outlander, which is sort of like a bigger sort of, I believe it's a 7-seater.
Yeah, the Outlander is a 7-seater,
sizable thing, and they're bringing this down. An Outlander Sport makes sense, and just in terms of what the way that they name things,
just brand recognition in that's a sense. But yeah, but it's from the exterior looks absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. Interior, the base model, there might be a little bit of things, but I mean, we haven't really spent time with it, so we have to really get to know it. But it was great to see. And then we took even a further stroll, and we landed at GWM stand. Mm. And there were quite a few products that I believe you got to drive in China.
Yes, I was at the Beijing Auto Show a few weeks back, and it's nice to see that they brought out the likes of the Tank 500, and we can put that image up there.
There we go.
So this is definitely a Toyota Prado-esque sort of competitor. You can see the styling cues have been lifted. You can see where they're aiming it at.
Yes.
And yeah, we are expecting to see that, I believe, with a hybrid. There may be a 3-liter V6 in the pipeline.
Okay.
But in South Africa, GWM is looking to bring in diesel engines.
Yes.
And they're looking to size up the engines a little bit.
Okay.
And then complement those with the 2-liter and 2.4-liter hybrids, which we have already started seeing. The one pictured here, you know, nice large sort of 7-seater SUV. I believe this was the hybrid model, and I believe it was a 2.4 with a hybrid.
Okay.
So very interesting engine combinations, but exceptionally well-appointed. Very, very supple rides and great gearbox programming, actually, which has been a part of our criticism in the past, has been the gearbox programming is a little wishy-washy. and they've shown that they listened that they're improving it. The other one that we saw was the, so this is the V6 version here, yes.
Nice.
Very nice. Hopefully we can, you know, get that one here locally on our shores. But the other one that I think is going to ruffle feathers, once again, double cab P500.
Mm-hmm.
So the P-Series is going to be broken up into the P300 and the P500. Mm-hmm. And the P500 is a slightly more Dodge Ram-y sort of take on the double cab sector.
Here we go.
Yeah, you know, massive, large, sort of, I think, 7-slat, 5-slat chrome front grille, large, deep headlights. You can really see, like, the Ford F-150 influence in the design.
Very much, yeah.
Definitely road-biased, more than off-road biased, but still got a very capable, and I think it is a BorgWarner.
Okay.
Four-wheel drive system in it, but electronically controlled and the likes. Exceptionally well appointed inside.
Yes.
Beautifully appointed. You would think that you were driving in a luxury SUV or a premier SUV rather than a double cab. And that is the way that we're seeing the market go. These vehicles are being used for sort of dual purpose, and they're spending most of their time on the road.
Yes, yes.
On the daily commute. So this should be really, really good for the local market.
I got to play with this tailgate just the other day.
We're hoping we get it. It's not confirmed,
it's
unfortunately.
It's not confirmed, but
yeah.
For the listeners and viewers, this tailgate is both. You can, like a normal Bucky tailgate,
drop it down,
or you just press and hold the button, and then like barn doors, it opens up sideways.
Yeah. It's a split folding tailgate.
So yes. Yeah, I haven't quite figured out the practicality or why it would be better, but it's definitely very cool to see and experience it.
Yeah, I think if you've got a tonneau cover over the top there, and having a sort of like a barn door style just allows you to get into like one side just quickly, you know, you don't need to really
just grab something
drop it
quick.
Down, but it also allows you to reach in further,
yes.
Because then you don't have the tailgate in the way. You've got more access to more. In your load bin. And, you know, those that are a little shorter in the leg or shorter in the arm or smaller in stature, ladies and the likes.
Like Sean.
Youngsters, or like Sean. they'll be able to utilize more of the load bin without needing to worry that, oh, it has to be right here at the tailgate.
Nice.
So I'm really keen on these two, and I'm glad you got a chance to see it.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to spend the last couple of minutes here answering a question.
Yeah.
So Ask Auto Trader, we had this question that came in here. And the question comes from Roy. I'm looking for a compact crossover /
family SUV
for under 250,000 Rand. With a plethora of options right now, what would be your top choices and advice?
Okay, so can I open up here?
Please do.
For the new car segment, there's not quite a plethora of options.
No,
like
it's not mentioned. The smorgasbord that he alludes to.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we both jumped onto our favorite sort of sites, and we looked for brand new options for him. And from a size comparison / little bit value for money comparison, there was two. And the one that I found was the Nissan Magnite.
Mm.
It's a very small Nissan product.
Yeah.
Looked very well specified as a base car, and very small, frugal little engine as well.
Yeah. Very affordable to run.
But I feel you can get more. But I mean, what's the new option that you found?
So there were two. I mean, it was torn between the Renault Kiger,
okay.
Which also very much like the Nissan Magnite, similar sort of design. The slightly more left-field choice is the Suzuki Ignis, but I feel that that's a little small when you're talking family. They don't quite have the boot size and the rear leg room. So it all depends. He hasn't stipulated as to what size his family is.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Are they teenagers? They're going to feel the Ignis a bit of a pinch. If they're youngsters, not the end of the world. Ignis, exceptionally cheap to run and maintain. Has that crossovery sort of vibe, but to me, it's still just a hatchback.
For me too. It's just a raised hatchback a little bit.
So I would highly recommend taking a look at pre-owned.
Yes.
250,000 Rand, unfortunately, doesn't buy you much in the new side, but on the used side, there were like 5,000.
Over
5,000 options on the Auto Trader site when we just selected a SUV body style and a price cap of 250,000 rand. 5,400 and something options.
100%.
So I thinned it out a bit.
Yeah.
I thinned it out. I then went to, you know, like nothing more than, let's say, 2 years old.
Okay.
Because then you don't mind it. There's a balance of warranty. There's a balance of service plan and the likes. And you're going to get something relatively new. So that's where I sat. It was no older than a 2022. Price cap of 250,000. And I still had about 300 options.
That's pretty cool. I didn't even fin it out.
I just went straight
250,000 cap SUV and just started going through the tabs and running through. Mm. My model wasn't too old either. It was a 2021 Renault Duster 1.5 DCI in tech road trim.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
The basically like highest spec.
It's pretty much higher spec. So you've got an infotainment. Mm. Not a massive screen in comparison to SUVs out there, but it's got a touch screen, sizable screen. It's got an Android app, Auto, Apple CarPlay, all of that. Yeah. The favorite part for me about this, and this is something I think I've told anybody that's sort of looking in that segment.
Anybody that'll listen.
Yeah, anybody that will listen. The favorite part of this car is that 1.5 DCI.
Absolutely, I agree. What a magic engine.
It is so frugal, this car. It's insane, actually.
Can you find them in auto at that price point?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can, but like obviously you might need to drop another year or so.
Okay.
In terms of...
Can you find it in 4x4?
I haven't really...
Okay, so this was just the front-wheel drive version. Okay, yeah. But I mean, that's not the end of the world because, yeah. I mean, for me, the 1.5 DCI with the auto box and the 4x4 is like the gold standard.
Yeah.
The car appears not to have quite the same creature comforts and luxury appointments, but it's massively hard-wearing, it's rugged, it's almost utilitarian, and it's a cracking drive. This thing absolutely sips fuel.
100%.
It is beautiful. And you don't see them broken down. You don't hear of problems with them. It is a cracking vehicle.
That's the thing.
Massively underrated.
When they came out, or originally launched, I had an opportunity to drive it for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I set out to see, okay, even if I drive normally, what is my average going to be?
Yeah.
And I think I landed on like 5.1s, 5.2s.
Which is brilliant.
Which is nothing. Yeah. And then I was like, okay, let's actually try driving this as conservatively as I possibly can.
Did you get it under 5?
4.5 per 100.
4.5.
4.5 per 100.
Fantastic. Okay. So, yeah. All right.
But I mean, there's so many options.
There are.
What did you get?
Okay, mine is nowhere near as interesting, but I think it is the sensible choice. And it is, believe it or not, and like I said, I limited it to 2 years. Is a two-year-old, so it's got about, you'll find them for about, with about 30 to 50, maybe as much as 70 if it's been a hard worker, 1,000 kilometers on it. But it falls into that 250,000 cap, and that is the first generation Toyota Urban Cruiser and its stable mate, its sister, the Suzuki Vitara Brezza.
Ah.
So I've driven a few of these in sort of various different points and various different ages and that because it is a rental favorite.
Yes.
But so is the Suzuki Swift, so is the Suzuki Sears, and rental companies do not buy unreliable, thirsty vehicles.
No.
These are actually very enjoyable to drive, and I was so pleasantly surprised by both of them. Mm. I think this is a fantastic, safe choice in terms of running costs, space, creature comfort, spec levels, all of that. You're going to get a mid-spec level for the 250,000 Rand, and I would highly recommend that.
Yeah.
Both of these, I think, I wouldn't mind either. The Duster or a
Cruiser. No, like I wanted Brezza. To say, like this is actually a very, very good option. And like you say, now you got it at a very young age, actually.
So balance of warranty, balance of service plan. And
all
the likes,
of that.
And you can still extend those if you prepare to spend a little bit more.
And here's the thing. There's so many of them actually in our parking lot. Like so many of our colleagues actually drive these cars. And that's obviously because they've been advised. It's a good car.
Can't all be wrong, let's put it that way. Yeah. But Rainer, that's all the time we got for today. And I want to thank you very much. It's always like a chatting cars like this, getting to experience them. We want to thank you very much for watching or listening. If you are watching this on YouTube and you've liked what you've seen, please do leave a like below. It doesn't cost you anything. Why are you being so stingy with it? Leave a like, Spend 2 seconds typing out a comment. Let us know your thoughts on these topics. And please hit that subscribe button so that you can be alerted as to when we upload new content. If you're listening in, we hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much. And we will see you next week.
Search Auto Trader.